insert that in the back of your folder. Just a couple more pages to get us through the end of chapter 2 of Galatians. Does everybody have a folder? Okay. All right, we're on page 9 in your notebooks. And it's Galatians chapter 2. All right, page 9 in Galatians chapter 2. We're looking at the early chapters of Galatians, first two chapters. Well, we're looking at the book itself in terms of Paul's three propositions, his three statements of affirmation that he makes. And then he gives the proof. And just to get our minds again going from since Sunday, what is the problem in Galatia, the region of Galatia, and those churches? I'm sorry, Bernie? All right, Judaizing teachers, what were they teaching? Circumcision or other aspects of the law, trying to bind it upon who? Specifically, Gentile Christians. And automatically, and Paul does allude to this in chapter 2, but if we didn't even have Galatians chapter 2 and we started talking about something like that, our minds would go back to what chapter in Acts? Just real quickly. Acts 15. That's right. All right, thank you all. Did everybody get the new material? All right, so you want one or two? Just one? All right. So this problem is running through the Galatian region, troubling the churches. Paul gets wind of it somehow, learns of this. And we covered all this in the introduction. So he writes this letter. And in this letter, Paul is affirming these things. We're calling them propositions. You might call them assertions or affirmations. Statements that need to be proven. And the first proposition is chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. Because Paul has to make this assertion, because what is happening to him personally in his absence? All right, they're attacking him, discrediting him. He's not a real apostle. He's not like all the rest of them. So the saints here in Galatia, you want to listen to Paul. He's a nobody. And first affirmation, the gospel that I preach, I didn't get it from who? Didn't get it from man. I got it from God, or by revelation from God or Jesus Christ. Now that's his assertion. Then he has to go about proving it. All right? First proof we looked at, chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. That's the affirmation. Verses, 11 and 12 is the affirmation. I'm getting myself mixed up here. All right, so the first proof is 13 and 14. It's not like my background. I wasn't raised this way. Second proof was verses 15 through 20. When I first started to preach, who had to teach me? Nobody. I just went right to preaching. Initially, after his conversion, we looked at Acts 9 as well. He went from Damascus into Arabia, then back again to Damascus, and he made that visit to Jerusalem. That's recorded in Acts chapter 9. Paul tells us how long he was there in this epistle. Just 15 days. You can't learn much in 15 days. But it was just a visit to get acquainted with the apostles, namely the apostle Peter. So it was not for training, it was not for learning. So the second proof is, when I started preaching, I just went right to work. The third proof of this affirmation is verses 21 through 24. What about those brethren in Syria and Cilicia when I went into those regions? Did they know me? He says, they didn't know me either, so I couldn't have learned it from anybody over there either. I wasn't known by face to them. And then we got to this one on Sunday. The fourth proof is what we call the Jerusalem Conference, which is Acts 15, and it's the first 10 verses of chapter 2. So when that conference was convened, or that meeting was held, again because those men came down from Judea trying to bind circumcision upon the Gentile Christians, did Paul go up there because the apostles sent for him and said, Paul, now we're going to straighten you out on all this mess? No. He says in Galatians 2 and the first part of verse 2. Why did he go up to Jerusalem? By revelation, which means who told him to go? God told him to go. He wasn't summoned by the apostles. He went up there because God told him to go. And they're going to discuss these doctrinal matters. And he wanted them to know. He and Barnabas told them all they had preached on their first journey, which is Acts chapters 13 and 14. So he wasn't sent by the apostles or sent for by the apostles. God said to go, and already he and Barnabas had already begun to debate these false teachers. They had great dissension with them on this matter when it was being taught there in Antioch of Syria. Then in this section of the Galatian letter, Paul mentions quite a bit about this, those who were of high reputation. And someone could read these statements and kind of get the wrong idea that Paul was being somewhat disrespectful about the apostles. And that's not his point at all. Is there anything between Paul and the apostles that would cause some friction? No. He didn't know them, they didn't know him. But what do they have in common, obviously? They're doing the same work, that's right. All of them have been called by God, individually chosen for this work, and they're all doing the same thing. Now, Paul is mainly going to the uncircumcised, and the apostles mainly went to the circumcised, but other than that, they're involved in the same work. So there was no friction between these people. So this idea, especially when you look at his words in chapter 2 and say verse 6, from those who were of high reputation, parentheses, my version has it, what they were makes no matter to me. That sounds like he's just being kind of snotty about it, but that's not what he's saying at all. What he's saying is, those apostles, they didn't help me in my work. They didn't need to help me in my work. The Lord enabled me to preach what I've been preaching. So he gets to Jerusalem, and he deals with the apostles. The last part of verse 2 says, privately, here in Galatians 2, and verse 2, and we referenced Acts 15 and verse 6. Seems to be that meeting that's referred to there in that passage in Luke's Acts record. So this idea was not to go up there and just show up the other apostles. That wasn't Paul's idea. He wouldn't have done that, and that wouldn't have accomplished anything at all. This was the last chart we got to on Sunday. Yes, it would have, not just against him, but it would have hindered the entire gospel work, and not just his apostleship, but the other apostles as well. You're right, Brother Lambert. His concern was not about himself personally or the other apostles, but really what was Paul's always, what was always his concern? His work, his labor, specifically among the Gentiles. And why is that so important now in this letter? Well, who's being affected? The Gentile Christians in Galatia, who are being I don't want to say oppressed, but they're being burdened and they're being afflicted, tormented by these Judaizing teachers to accept something that they don't need. And it's causing them great trouble. So he says here in verse 2, it was because of a revelation that I went up and I submitted to them, that is the apostles, the gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but I did so privately or in private. To those who were of reputation, I think that would be the apostles he's talking about, for fear that I might be running or had run in vain. So Paul's concern was, let's do this privately, not out in the open, for reasons that I think we'll talk about just in a moment. So he didn't want his work to have been in vain. That's always his concern, obviously, in this whole situation. The New King James, I don't believe, has the word for fear in the text, does it? Do you see that, those who are using that version? I don't think it's in there. Verse 2. It is in the American Standard. And I think it's in the original text. I looked at it, but I didn't double check it today. But this idea of his use of the phrase for fear, that I did this private meeting for fear, does not suggest that Paul had doubts about his work. Well, I really was worried about this, so I thought, well, rather than show myself foolish in public, let's go to the side here and talk about it. And that's not what's going on at all. No, let's not even entertain that thought whatsoever. Would it meet with the other apostles' approval? Paul's not going up here to gain their stamp of approval. They've been apostles longer than I've been an apostle, so I'm sort of like a junior apostle. I've got to get their... None of that's the case at all. He doesn't need their permission. As he's already stated, I've just been preaching what the Lord told me to preach, specifically among the Gentile areas. That's right. They've got to see that they're on the same page. And I think that's where we're going with this with point here, Brother Lambert. Whether or not the apostles approved of his efforts is beside the point. Who had he been pleasing? God. He's been preaching what God told him to preach, especially on the first journey. And so what if James and Cephas and the other apostles, John, what if they didn't approve of Paul's work? So what? That wouldn't make any difference. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm just, what if that took place? Yes, sir. Yes, just showed them what he was going to preach. That's correct. No. Paul didn't need their approval, their permission whatsoever. He's just telling them, here's what I've been doing in my work. All right, now, going on with this point. What if the meeting had produced the decree that circumcision was required? Of course, it did not. We know that because of Acts 15 tells us. Were all the apostles in agreement in Acts 15? Did they come to the same conclusion? Yes, they did. And the decision was, what about circumcision? Not required. Stop troubling these Gentile saints. And to make that decision known, how did that get disseminated among all the Christians? All right, they wrote the letter in Acts 15. But the point here I think we're trying to make is that if the meeting produced the decree that circumcision was necessary, Paul was still covered, if I can use it that way, because he had private talks, and it wouldn't have produced a public wedge between him and the apostles, because what had he been preaching publicly? No circumcision. So what I'm trying to say here is that Paul was being a great diplomat. It's not political. He's being diplomatic about this. And he talks to them in private. But I have no trouble believing in my mind that there never was any doubt among all the apostles that what decision would be reached? The same one. They would come to the same decision. That's right. They're all inspired. You're right, Roger. They're all on the same page. But they still had these talks this way, and it's being very diplomatically held. Yes, Mike. Okay. All right. Yes, the Jerusalem elders were not to the same level of... they could have had the apostles' hands laid on them and had some spiritual gifts, but they weren't to the point of where the apostles were. Obviously, I think that's your point. So these discussions were held in private. And I'm not trying to suggest at all that there was any hint of a doubt about how it would turn out. But their bases were covered if it did go the other way. I think that's the point that Paul's making here in the Galatian letter. All right. Now, that being said, look now at Galatians 2, verses 6 through 10. This idea of being mindful of the apostles' reputation on one side, accounts for the private meeting. But on the other hand, when you boil it all down, what about the reputation of the apostles as far as Paul's concerned? Doesn't matter to me. Verses 6 through 10. Yes.
I mean, Paul hadn't been there.
That's right. They were leaders in the church in Jerusalem. They were the Lord's emissaries on the earth. You're correct. So they would have the following of men, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying they would have the respect. Maybe that's a better word. The respect of the brethren. Mike, read for us, please, Mike Bryant, verses 6 through 10 of Galatians chapter 2. This concludes Paul's point about the reputation of the other apostles really was not a factor. He says, they added nothing to me. Read those verses for us.
And from those who seem to be influential, what they were makes no difference to me. God shows no partiality. Those of us who seem to be influential, in the poor, the very thing I was eager to do.
All right, two things to point out in this section. Verse 8, what's the point that Paul makes? What was realized? And this wasn't any big secret. I mean, this came out in discussions. What understanding was gained in this meeting? And who worked through both parties? God helped these apostles work to the circumcision, And the same God will help Paul work to the uncircumcision. That's verse 8. Now, verse 9. What evidence does Paul give us in this letter that the other apostles, and I hate to use the word approve, but that they didn't approve of Paul's work, but what tells us that there was never any problem between Paul and the other apostles? What's he write here? Now, you don't offer the right hand of fellowship to someone that you're not going to have anything to do with, do you? I mean, fellowship is an important New Testament idea. And they were fully accepting of Paul. Now, we keep forgetting to say one name. This is the Acts 15 visit. Who's with Paul? Let's not forget Barnabas. I mean, he's there with him too, but Paul's writing this letter. So he says, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. They were in full agreement with what we had been doing and preaching. And this again goes back to Acts chapters 13 and 14. It's that first journey. And where did they go on the first journey? They went to some Galatian cities. They went and traveled and started those churches. The very people he's writing to here is what Paul said he talked about when he went to Jerusalem on this matter. That's found in Acts chapter 15. So did they approve? And again, I hesitate to use that word, but did they approve of Paul's work? They did. Absolutely, they approved of it. They were in hearty agreement with Paul. No problems whatsoever. So this proves, this is another proof, when Paul says, I'm every bit an apostle as much as the others are, and the gospel that I preach, I didn't get it from any man. I got it from God. I'm on par with everyone else. And this meeting in Acts 15 proves it. That's proof of his affirmation. All right? A couple of the points about this section. Paul didn't go to be judged by anyone. That's just stating it plainly. He was equal. He went to confront the false teachers. And he would not be intimidated. Look at verses 3 through 5. What in this section of Galatians 2 tells us that Paul wasn't going to be intimidated or strong-armed by this group. When he got there, we don't learn this in Acts 15, I don't believe, but we learned it here. Who was with Paul and Barnabas? Titus went. All right, let's look at Galatians 2. Kevin, feel free to read for us, please, Galatians 2, verses 3 through 5. Now, what do we know about Titus from this passage? He's Greek, Gentile. Well, Titus' situation. Now, so what does this group want to do? You're going to circumcise this young man. And what tells us how Paul felt about it? He didn't budge an inch. We did not even yield, he says, for no, not even an hour. We don't talk that way much anymore. We'd use it. Modern terms, we'd say, I didn't give an inch on that. Don't even think about it. That's not going to happen. Now, someone always wants to bring up Acts 16 and verse 3 with Galatians 2. Young man Timothy, what happened to that passage? He was circumcised. Someone says, see, there's a contradiction in the Scripture. Perhaps you've heard that before. How do we harmonize? This is outside Galatians. How do we harmonize those two? Paul had Timothy circumcised, but he didn't have Titus circumcised. Why? Yes. Partly Jew. His mother was a Jew. His father was a Greek or a Gentile. But why did Paul, in fact, it says in Acts 16, why did Paul take Timothy and have him circumcised? Well, it would avoid what problem? He was going to join Paul on the second journey. Remember, by that time, he and Barnabas had split up. And Paul took Silas, and he gets to where he's going, and he meets Timothy, learns about him, meets him, but he takes him and has him circumcised because they're going to go preach to who? Not just Gentiles, but to Jews as well. And that would have been a stumbling block in that work. But now let's keep it straight here. Paul did not have Timothy circumcised for what reason? Because it was required for his salvation. What's being pressed here in Galatians 2? That is the reason. And that's why Paul said, I didn't even give in for an hour. I didn't budge at all. So the difference is quite clear when you consider the two contexts. Timothy was, for purposes of being more, for the audience to receive his preaching. Expedience. Good word, Bernie. Thank you. In this situation, it was because they were pressing the matter for salvation purposes, and Paul says, if that's the reason, we won't budge an inch on that. So that's always a good discussion to have when you think about Titus versus Timothy and one not being circumcised. So Paul would not be strong-armed. He wouldn't be intimidated. They try to make Titus a situation, the issue, but Paul says, I did not yield even for an hour. I'm not going to be browbeaten on this. I'm just not going to do it. That shows us the determination that Paul had on the matter. Okay. Now, just a few more points on this proof statement. The only thing the apostles asked or they required of Paul, verse 10 that Mike read for us, was what? All right, we want you to remember the poor. And Paul writes in the letter, which is, I was wanting to do that. Now, if you remember back in our introduction to this book, the collection for the saints was a very important part of the third journey. And I believe Galatians is a third journey letter. And you don't have any mention of the collection in Galatians, which I think it indicates to us, that this letter was written before that collection was taken up and gotten from all the churches for the needy saints in Jerusalem. So, here's an indicator in the letter itself that this book is written before he began collecting the benefits, because in both the Corinthian letters and the Roman letter, Paul mentions the collection among those brethren. But here, it is not mentioned. He just says, I was very willing to be a part of that great work, which he was. The Acts record bears that out. Okay. So there's the fourth proof. It's that conference in Jerusalem. And Paul just lays it out for us. Now, the fifth and final proof statement is back in Galatians 2. It's verses 11 through 14. What is the fifth proof Paul gives that says, the gospel that I preached is not according to men. I didn't learn it from man. I got it by revelation from Jesus Christ. What happened in Galatians 2, 11 through 14? All right, we had an issue. And it wasn't just between brethren. Who was it between? Two apostles. Problem. A big problem. And who was in the right? Now, if Paul was second tier apostle, if Paul was second fiddle to... And how had he already described Peter earlier in chapter 2? Verse 9. He was a pillar. What's a pillar do? I mean, just any old pillar. It supports. It holds something up. So Peter is this staunch pillar in the church, but he was to be blamed, Paul says in this text. And so and how did he withstand Peter? He says, right to his face, and not just to his face, but before all. Not privately. Right out in the open. Now, I don't think Paul got ugly about it. I don't think Paul got hateful about it. But Paul was firm. And he had to be, because was something very important at stake here. Absolutely, it was at stake. And it goes directly to the issue as to why he's writing the Galatian letter. Peter was playing the hypocrite. So we'll work through this now. One of the pillars that he mentions had to be dealt with regarding his hypocrisy. Let's read 11 through 14 of Galatians 2. Rob Cook, read those four verses for us, please. Okay, that's good right there. Paul's public refuting, confronting, condemning Peter proves, he offers it as another proof, that he is an equal apostle with all the rest of them. And he stepped forward and dealt with Peter on this occasion. Now, let's follow his line of thinking as we work through these particular verses. All right? Why did Peter have to be confronted? I think there's not just one reason. I mean, we could say, well, because he was wrong. But there's... Go ahead. No, go ahead.
He wasn't teaching something.
Okay, it wasn't because of what he was teaching. It was what he was doing. That's right. But there are several points to consider why Paul dealt with Peter. All right. Number one, he writes in verse 14. I think all the versions, do they have the word straightforward in verse 14? He was not being straightforward about the gospel. Okay, what does that mean, not being straightforward about the gospel? Up front. Clear? I heard clear. Not in step with. All right. He's being duplicitous. He's being a hypocrite. All right, he's not walking up, he's not following the dictates of the gospel. Not being straightforward about this. That's one reason Paul dealt with him. And look at the point that Paul makes. In fact, he says this to him. This is verse 14. When I saw that they... Now, let's stop here. Who's the they? I thought it was just Peter. All right, these men came from James. Well, now, where was James? He's in Jerusalem. So see, they're coming from the big church in Jerusalem. Jewish headquarters, let's put it that way, Jewish headquarters. And they come down from Jerusalem, when Peter sees them, well, before they got there, what had Peter been willing to do? Eat with the Gentile brethren. That's correct. And do you find it interesting that this is Peter that's involved? I don't think there's any irony here. But what is so unique about it that it's not Matthew or James, but it's Peter? All right. That's it. Mike, exactly right. He was the one who first went to the Gentiles. Acts chapter 10. And preached to Cornelius. And helped bring the Gentiles into the kingdom. And so now he's the one, before the men from James came, before the big shots came from Jerusalem, Peter was very willing to eat with the Gentile Christians. But when they get to Antioch, what's he do? Oh, I can't be seen with you people. And that's not being straightforward. That's the problem. So look at Paul's point. And so when he sees this, so it's not just Peter, but it's when these men come from James. It's Peter and these men who are doing this. When they weren't being straightforward about the gospel, I said to Cephas, and then again in verse 14, in the presence of all. This wasn't a, Peter, let's go aside, I've got to tell you something. No, he just let them have it right in front of everybody. In the presence of all. If you being a Jew, now was Peter a Jew? He was a Jew. If you being a Jew live like the Gentiles and not like the Jews, let's stop right there. Was Peter living like the Gentiles? Yes. In what sense? That's it. That's it, James. He was free in Christ regarding the law like any New Testament Christian. But especially who? The Gentiles. He's living like them. He's even associating with them willingly. And so Paul says, now if you, Peter, you're a Jew. But if you're living like the Gentiles, which you should be doing that, then what's the question he asking? Then how come you are asking the Gentiles to live like a Jew? See, you can't do that. You're sending a mixed message. You're trying to force these Christians back into something that you willingly left a long time ago when you obeyed the gospel. And you can't do that. That's not the truth of the gospel. I mean, Paul put it right to him. I wonder what Peter's answer to that question was. What do you think? He didn't have an answer. You think he wilted? Reminds me of 1 Kings 18 on Mount Carmel when Elijah asked them that question. What was their answer? They didn't have one. When he said, either choose God or choose Baal, says they answered him not a word. Why not? They didn't have one. They knew they were wrong. And I would suspect that was Peter's answer here. He knew he had done something terribly wrong. And Paul was exactly right about this. So he presses Peter on this and really bores right in on the main issue here. Now, he did this Why did Peter do this? Did he feel compelled to do this? Well, he only did this for one reason. That's the word I wanted to hear. Have you ever felt pressure to act a certain way when certain people come into your circle of influence? Peer pressure. We're all subject to it. All of us are. And especially who are the most vulnerable to that? Young people are. We can all cave so easily to peer pressure. When certain influential people come, we might act in a certain way just to gain their approval, but ordinarily we wouldn't do that when we're not around them. But that goes to show you that is any Christian immune from temptation? No, because in this situation, what happened? Even an apostle of the Lord committed sin and was not straightforward about the truth of the gospel. Peer pressure can be immense. Yeah. Yes. No. Inspiration certainly led these men in truth, but it did not make them act in a certain way. It was still their choice to behave one way or another, and Peter chose the wrong way here. Yes. Yes, I would say that's correct. No, we should show no favor to men because God shows no favor to men. And someone could say, well, but you know, that's Peter. I mean, you can't go up to Peter and say something like that to him. He gets a pass. No one gets a pass. We're all subject to the gospel. All of us are. And that's one good point to make. But the other point I want to make here is, as we're talking about it, is pressure can be immense. And we've got to withstand the pressure to do wrong and say, but if that's not right, it don't matter who's doing it. We must not go along with that kind of activity. One more reason why Peter stood to be condemned is because he led a good man astray. Didn't he? Remember how Barnabas was described in Acts chapter 4? A good man. Just, full of the Holy Spirit. He was thoughtful of his brethren. He sold that tract of land and gave money for their necessities and their needs. He was Paul's great preaching partner on the first missionary journey. But when these certain men from James came, and Barnabas sees what Peter's doing, what's he do? He goes right along behind him. Other Jews, and even Barnabas. So, that's Peter's fault. Now, really, whose fault is it that Barnabas went astray? It's Barnabas' fault. But who aided in that? Peter bore that guilt. Does Jesus ever teach us that we can lead someone else astray? Yes, He does. Most certainly does. If I get lost, whose fault is it? It's going to be my fault that I'm lost. But if someone leads me astray, he, she, they will bear the guilt of that. In this case, Peter bore the guilt of leading Barnabas astray. And so for that, he needed to be confronted and he stood condemned. And Paul dealt with him on that matter. All right. Question. I'm sorry, what now? Mike's question is this about circumcision or about the diet? And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, Mike. It seems to me that the eating with the Gentiles was just a social connection he had with his brethren, and now he's willing to cut that off because he fears the party of the circumcision. To me, I think it's just the fact that they were Jews who were not accepting of their Gentile brethren. And the eating was just the incidental thing that Peter was doing at the time. He's not saying, oh, I can't even eat with you now because you're Gentiles and I'm a Jew. I think that's where we're going with this. The question is, what made Peter's actions so hypocritical? Why was it so bad? Okay, We had two people talking now. You first. What now?
He was the first one to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. He knew what
the truth was. He knew what the truth was. All right. The answer, I believe, is back in Acts chapter. So let's turn to Acts 11 just for the moment. Let's read. I know that's a lengthy reading, but let's read Acts 11, 1 through 18. And Norm is always my good reader. He reads at a good pace. I'm going to pick on you, Norm. Read for us the first 18 verses of Acts 11. Now, to set the context here, when does Cornelius' conversion take place in Acts? Was chapter 10. Okay. But something happens after Peter gets back from Caesarea. That's Acts 11. Who calls him into question? For where he had been and what he had done. The Jews call him into question. Listen to Peter's response. Now, Norm, read for us Acts 11, starting in verse 1 and read through verse 18. All right, thank you. So, Peter gets back, and those of the circumcision took issue with him. And so Peter goes through the story. He tells them what happened in Acts chapter 10. What point does he make, especially get down to starting in verse 15, he says, as I began to speak, what happened? Well, the Holy Spirit fell upon them, as upon us at the beginning. Us who at the beginning? Us apostles, Acts chapter 2. So the Gentiles got the Holy Spirit baptism-wise, just like the apostles did in Acts chapter 2. And so Peter's point is, now verse 17, if God therefore gave to them what He gave us, what did Peter say to these men of the circumcision? Who was I to stand in God's place? Or who was I to stand in God's way? That statement alone, what was Peter admitting? What did he know? He came to their defense on that day. Now what is he doing? Some years later. You see the hypocrisy? He defended them. When he came under attack after he converted them, now he's the one guilty of hypocrisy by refusing to eat with these brethren because certain ones from James come down from Jerusalem. And Paul says in essence, Peter, you cannot do that. That's such a hindrance to the gospel, the effort of the gospel. So that's what made his efforts, his actions, so hypocritical. It's because he knew better. And what is the essence of hypocrisy? Doing something when you know that it's not right, and you do it anyway. That's hypocrisy. All right. Our time is up. We'll pick this up, Lord willing, on Sunday morning. With the conclusion to this particular proof, then we'll forge on ahead to the rest of chapter 2. So again, you have lesson, pages 10 and 11. You didn't get these two new pages. They're back here on the shelf in the back by the computer desk. You'll need them for Sunday morning. Thank you for your comments to this evening.